A ghost story for Christmas. A woman with wavy red hair and wearing a green and brown checked coat cycles across the countryside, then passes along the winding driveway of a mansion. She frowns as a motor car passes, with an older gentleman smiling at the wheel.
John?
A housekeeper is waiting for her at the door with a lamp. Now inside.
You came quick.
They said it would only be a matter of hours.
Aye. His 11s are up.
I beg your pardon?
His 11s. Flesh on the back of his neck, standing out like the number 11. That's the mark of death. I know it well. You won't last the night. That's my opinion. I imagine you has expectations, eh, Mrs? We're moving in here, and the master's gone.
Well, we have an understanding. My uncle has always led me to believe that the estate will be divided equally between my cousin John and myself.
Oh, aye.
Though it's in very poor taste to discuss such things at a time like this.
He won't mind, the old devil.
Mrs. Goundrey.
Oh, I know he's a parson, but he's the very devil. I should know, slaving and doing for him all these years. Still, he's got a reckoning coming soon, isn't he? With the Almighty. Oh, someone else.
Later, the woman is sitting in candlelight at her dying uncle's bedside.
Mary? Mary? Is that you?
Yes, Uncle, it's me. Is there anything that you need?
I'm dying, Mary. Come closer, Mary.
She gets up and perches on the bed.
There's something you must know.
The track Tate Middeth, from the story by M.R. James, written and directed by Mark Gatiss. The University of Cambridge in the daytime. Mary's cousin John, now older, crosses the campus, then with a cautious look over his shoulder, approaches the library.
Long time since your last visit, sir.
Yes, indeed. I have here the title of a book. A book I want. The light is very bad, you see, and to go traipsing up and down stairs at my time of life, I wonder...
I quite understand, sir. I've had it a daily trial myself. Oh, you should hear my knees when I bend down.
Yes, yes.
Like pistol shots.
I wonder, is there anyone who could go and find the book for me?
Just the fellow. One of our students, paying his way through the university. Mr. Garrett?
Yes?
Have you a minute to help this gentleman?
With pleasure, Sniffer.
Eh?
Mr. Hodgson.
Gentleman, he is after a book.
Well, he's come to the right place. Right. Talmud. Tractate Middeth. The Commentaries of Nachmanides. Amsterdam, 1707.
And what's that when it's at home?
It's a collection of Hebrew writings, Mr. Hodgson.
Oh, very exotic.
I think I can find this easily enough. Oh, I suppose it's that edition you want.
That and no other. If it's no trouble.
None at all.
Much obliged, I'm sure.
Won't be a moment.
The library clerk sniffs. As Garrett climbs a gloomy staircase, John waits by the desk, nervously tapping his foot and chewing his lip. When the fresh-faced young man returns empty-handed, John gets to his feet.
Well?
I'm so sorry, the book's out.
Out? You sure?
Well, I saw a gentleman take the book off the shelf.
A gentleman? What? What was he like?
Oh, shortish, In a sort of cloak, old-fashioned like a priest. If you don't mind waiting, he'll be down in a minute.
They look along the book-lined corridor to a doorway, where dust motes are dancing in the sunlight.
I'm sure he'll be here in a bit, and maybe he'll let you have the book.
No, I won't, Sam. I can't wait now, thank you. No. Train, you see. I must catch... I'll be back. Tomorrow. Yes, tomorrow.
All right, I'll have it ready.
Shouldn't have left it so late, should he?
Young Garrett idles along a corridor, flanked by floor-to-ceiling wooden bookcases. Turning a corner, he spots something amiss. He goes up to shelves filled with similarly bound books, then grabs a stepladder so he can reach a large tome that's sticking out slightly more than the rest.
Something the matter, chum?
No, not really, George. Just that I feel such a bloody fool.
Oh?
A gentleman was after this book. I told him it was out. And here it is. Large as life. My mistake. It's funny, though. Hmm? I've not seen him come down. Did you see him? Old man in a cloak, bald, had the look of a vicar.
I fear I was too immersed in the Apocrypha of the Book of Daniel, chum. Well, you've found it now. I'm sure our customer will be back for it in his own good time. What's that?
Yes, I've noticed that too, last couple of days. I assumed it was your...
Not guilty. Ready rub. Doesn't smell too healthy, does it?
Dust?
Rum sort of dust.
George clamps his pipe in his mouth, then wanders off, and Garrett does the same, skipping back down the corridor and leaving the tractate Middeth resting on the stepladder. The musty old tome seems to attract the dust. Then, a sinister, shape-shifting shadow slides over its faded red cover and swallows it in inky blackness. The next day, John returns to the library and seems surprised to find no one on the desk. Garrett's passing by and spots him.
Early start today, sir.
You have it. You have the book.
You're going to think me a bit dim, Mr...
Eldred, why? What's happened? What's wrong?
Well, it hadn't been taken out at all. If you don't mind waiting, I'll go and fetch it now.
Garrett skips off along the corridor. A moment later, the portly Mr. Hodgson comes up the stairs, gives John a nod, then does up his flies. Garrett makes his way back along the corridor of books, slowing down when he notices how many particles of dust are floating around in the air. He sniffs. The strange figure in the black cloak is standing with his back to him by a bookcase.
Oh, sorry. Excuse me. Are you... Will you be taking out that book? It's just that there's a gentleman downstairs who's very keen to borrow...
As the figure begins to turn, Garrett screams in horror. Figures prey on a roof decoration. Waiting downstairs, John impatiently taps his foot and drums his middle finger on the chair arm. Mr. Hodgson holds up a kettle to offer him a drink, but John just looks away and resumes his tapping. It's 10:15 on his pocket watch.
This is intolerable.
Sir?
Is it a long way to that part of the library?
Hmm?
Where our friend is.
Oh. Well... I was thinking myself it was a bit funny. That young fellow's very swift, as a rule. I'll just see if I can conjure him up.
I beg your pardon?
On the telephone, sir.
Hello?
Ah, is Mr. Garrett up there with you? Is... What? And... Oh, dear. Right. Thank you. Well, I'm sorry to tell you, sir, but something seems to have happened that's a bit awkward. Mr. Garrett's had an attack.
You mean something... Someone has injured him?
Oh, no, no, nothing like that. No, it seems he was taken poorly and sent home out the back.
See.
Not a strong constitution, that young lad, I'd say. Now, sir, as to your book. Perhaps you might be able to find it yourself. We don't want you disappointed twice now, do we?
No, I think I'd rather wait. These old legs of mine, as I say. I'll make other arrangements.
George is in Garrett's lodgings.
You thought you saw something?
I did see something.
Go on.
That smell of dust. The one you mentioned.
Yes.
It was very strong.
Perhaps you've got a lungful and it caused you to take a tumble.
No, no. It was something I saw.
You don't mind this?
Oh, no.
Mother says it's pretentious of me, but I don't know. Gives one a certain distinction, don't you think? Like Stuart Granger or someone. Sorry. Go on, something you saw.
Garrett thinks back to walking along the dust-filled corridor and spotting the strange figure.
Oh, sorry. Will you be taking out that book? It's just that there's a gentleman downstairs who's very keen to borrow...
Garrett's face fills with horror as the figure slowly turns, revealing a cobweb of white hair covering its empty eye sockets and decaying, cadaverous face. Garrett passes out on the sunlit, dusty floor.
Trick of the light?
No.
The dust, as I say, it got on your chest and gave you a funny turn.
No, George, I know what I saw, and it nearly did for me.
So, what are you saying it was? A ghost?
Garrett shrugs.
Never heard old Sniffer say the place was haunted.
Nor me.
I don't mean to seem uncharitable, chum.
But you don't believe me.
Well, things like that just don't happen anymore, do they?
Which suggests you believe that once they did.
We used to think the sun moved around the earth, and that the moon was made of green cheese.
Well, maybe it is.
If I were you, I'd take the chance to get away for a while, old son. Change of air always works wonders. What about the seaside? Or somewhere in the country? Read a few books, eh? Rather than just cataloguing them. I have a couple I could lend you. Fully illustrated.
No thanks.
Think about it. Fresh air. Nice pubs. Pretty girls. Toodaloo.
Now, as a steam train puffs through the countryside, Garrett's leaning by the window in a busy carriage.
Of course, it's all go, go, go these days. I can recall a charmingly leisurely charabang excursion to Formby Beach when I was a slip of a thing, and quite a spread was laid on, but one was content with fish paste then, wasn't one, Mr. Talleyrand? These young people and their ideas, traipsing all over the continent. I don't see the point. I mean, to say they could go to Morecambe or Lytham for prices such as that. Or, I dare say, at a push, Clandudno.
But that wouldn't do for us, would it, Mr. Talleyrand?
But Burnham now. Charming and lovely scenery and very, very reasonably priced. Do you have anywhere to stay?
Yes, I'm being met.
Oh. Oh, here we are. Cases, Mr. Talleyrand.
Tickets are checked on the platform.
Ticket, please.
What is it? Oh, of course. Oh, silly me. Oh, where have I put the dratted thing? Of course, in more refined days, one can seal the unused portion in one's glove. Haven't, have I? Mr. Talleyrand.
Hurry, please, would you?
Do you have my ticket remnant?
I'm sorry, it's just I'm not feeling very well.
I'm very sorry, I'm sure.
It's just I'm not quite myself.
Well, there's no need to be impertinent.
I wasn't.
Good manners cost nothing, do they, Mr. Tully?
I didn't mean to offend you.
It's just as I was saying, everyone's in a hurry, hurry, hurry. No refinement, no grace. Only the other day...
Looking shaky, Garrett steps out of the queue and looks along the platform. Through the steam, he sees a cloaked figure standing in silhouette with his back to him. The figure turns, but it's only a young priest in a brimmed hat. Garrett's eyelids droop and his vision distorts. Now he's lying on the platform in a fog of steam. As he comes round, Mary and a young woman join the sea of concerned faces looking down at him. Later, Garrett is sitting in a deck chair on the banks of a boating lake. He watches a lone rowing boat pass by, then sits, lost in thought. Now he's with Mary and her daughter in their guest house.
I can't thank you enough. You've been so kind to me.
What did the doctor say, Mr. Garrett?
Oh, it's overwork, that's all. Nervous strain. My memory's a bit foggy too. Lots of rest. That's what I need.
Well, we're quite empty at this time of the season, so it's very nice for us to have some company.
It's a lovely room, Mrs. Simpson. I feel I'm in very good hands.
What do you do for a living?
I work in a library.
Oh.
Cataloguing, research, that sort of thing. Helps pay my way through university.
We're not so keen on books, are we, Mum?
Oh, no. They're fine places, libraries. Fine.
But...
Well...
Perhaps he could solve our puzzle. You see, there's a book...
We don't want to bother Mr. Garrett with our silly problems, Anne.
No, I'd love to help if I can. Really, I would. And if it's to do with the book, well, I'm in a pretty good position, aren't I?
Yes, I suppose so. But we don't even know the name of the wretched thing.
Well, what's it about?
We don't know that either.
Except that we don't think it's in English, do we, Mum? Don't suppose that's much of a clue.
I'll tell you the story. That's the best way. You seem a kind soul.
I'm all it is.
This is going back some 20 years or more, mind. Back in the 30s. I had an old uncle. A Dr. Rant.
Rant taps his finger as he waits for his food.
He wasn't a distinguished man. And not a nice one either. He was a priest. Though I'm sure I don't know how he got to be one. He never did any duty, as far as I could tell, in the late part of his life. And he wasn't what you'd call Christian in his ways. He hadn't any wife or family. Only one niece, that's me. And one nephew. My cousin John. Though he didn't really like either of us.
Uncommonly warm, Uncle, for this time of year.
You can feel the chill setting in, though, John. Autumn's coming.
Pair of prize beauties, aren't you, eh? Sitting there like crows, waiting to pick my eyes out.
Oh, really?
And stick your fat fingers into my pockets.
Well, we shall see. We shall see.
And there he was, all alone in the world and rich as Croesus. Well, now. One autumn, Dr. Rant became ill, and they sent for me to nurse him.
Come closer, Mary. There's something you must know.
I've made my will in John's favour.
Well, it's your money, Uncle Thomas. You can do what you like with it.
Yeah, but listen, Mary, I'm not very fond of John. And I made another will in your favour. What do you think to that?
Oh.
You can have everything, Mary. Everything. If you can find the will, that is. Only I don't mean to tell you where it is. I wrote the will in a book, Mary. A printed book. It's not in the house. It's in safekeeping elsewhere. Now, I want to start you both off on the same terms. John has a bit of purchase, because he can go where the book is. But I'll tell you two things he doesn't know. First, the will's in English. But you won't know that if you ever see it. And the other thing, this will help you find it.
A slip of paper.
If you have the wits to use it, that is.
There are numbers on it. 11334. He laughs wickedly. Then candles are snuffed out. Now Mary, Mrs. Goundrey and two men are looking dispassionately into the old man's grave.
Not to be trusted, Mrs. That's what I say. Whatever he said, whatever he promised you. Twisted he was. Twisted. Where others had a soul, he had a corkscrew. Don't trust him. In life or death.
As they walk away from the grave, a spider picks its way across a wet, crisscrossing cobweb. Back in the present, Anne gives Garrett an envelope. He takes out the piece of paper and reads the numbers written on it.
Of course, I tried to speak with John Eldred. Tried to appeal to him. But he didn't want anything.
What is it?
It's the name rings a bell. You were saying, Mrs. Simpson, you wrote to him.
Yes. But he didn't pay any attention at all. Since then, he has enjoyed his inheritance, while Anne and I have had to take in ruddy lodgers. Although I must say that hasn't been nearly as unpleasant as I'd thought.
Do you think your cousin's got any more of a clue about the name of the book?
I often thought he must do. People tell me he's always being seen around booksellers and libraries. I suppose he must have discovered which books are missing from my uncle's library, but were entered in his catalogue. And he's hunting them down?
After packing his suitcase, Garrett takes the train back across the countryside. Sitting with his notebook resting on his case, he writes out the numbers a few times and studies them. Opposite him, in the otherwise empty carriage, a man sits sleeping. Garrett draws a line under the numbers.
Come on, think. Which is it? Which is it?
Racking his brains, he screws his eyes shut, then turns and looks out of the window at the passing scenery. The train enters a tunnel and is plunged into darkness. In flashback, the dust motes are dancing in the sunlight beside the old library books. Garrett runs his finger over the bookcases as he walks along the corridor. Back in the present, he frowns at the notebook, which is now covered in a thin patina of grey dust. He wipes it, then catches a small wisp of grey hair between his fingers. The train enters another tunnel. In the inky darkness, a light flashes on Garrett's pensive face. When he looks across the carriage, Rant, the cadaverous figure in the cloak, is sitting opposite him and reaching towards him with a skeletal hand. In daylight again, The chap opposite him wakes with a start. Garrett catches his breath and hangs his head. Throwing a suspicious look over his shoulder, Garrett approaches the college library. Inside, he runs his fingers over the spines of books until he finds one with a catalogue number that matches Dr. Rant's numbers. He opens the book, quickly leafs through the pages, then closes it again. On another shelf, he finds a book with the same catalogue number, but with the digits separated differently. He quickly leafs through it, then puts it back. Now he's in an older part of the library, separated by a metal gate. He sniffs the dust-filled air curiously, then turns his attention to the ancient tomes lining the shelves. He runs his finger along the spines, then discovers an empty space.
The Talmud. Of course that was it. The Talmud. The Tractate Middeth.
Countryside not to your liking, son?
No, it's not that.
I'm not surprised. I'm a martyr to pollen myself.
Listen, 11-3-34. Is it out? Has it gone out?
11-3-34.
Do you remember that number?
Oh, I say a lot of numbers, Mr. Garrett.
Yes, I know.
An awful lot.
All right, then. Has a Mr. Eldred called again?
Huh?
The gentleman who called the day I was taken ill.
Eldred?
Yes, come on. You must remember him.
No, he's not been in again, not since you went off on your halls.
Right.
No need to. He wrote, you see, requesting his book.
He wrote?
Sent a money order to cover it. A bob over the price of a parcel, as a matter of fact.
He sent for the book?
Yes. It'll be going down by train this morning.
No time. There's very little time.
Eh?
Mr. Hodgson, could you show me the ticket and his address, please?
I'm happy to.
Mr. Hodgson opens a drawer of card files.
Ah, yes. There's the ticket on the file. J. Eldred, 11-3-34. Title of work, T.A.
Talmud, yes, Tractate Middeth.
Not a novel, I should hazard a guess. No, he refers to it as a tract.
Yes, the address, Mr. Hodgson. Hurry, please.
Ah, now, if I made a mistake in this whole transaction, it's that I failed to take down the gentleman's address in my little book. And no, I don't keep all the addresses in my head. Otherwise, what would be the point of my little book?
Damn. When did the parcel go off from here?
Half past 10.
It's just one now.
What?
The donations list. The Talmud was given to the library, wasn't it? There might still be a record. Right. Ah, there it is. Brettfield.
You want me to come with?
No. Don't want to spoil your evening. Cynthia, is it?
Cynthia, yes.
Good luck.
And you, chum.
Garrett looks back, and George gives him a wave. Now, Garrett drums his fingers on the train windowsill as he pulls into Brettfield station. On the platform, he sees John chatting to a guard. He watches the guard handing John a brown paper parcel tied with string, then leaps to his feet. Hugging the parcel, John sets off along a leafy country lane, unaware that Garrett is creeping after him, keeping a discreet distance and using the foliage as cover. Unable to wait, John unties the string and drops it on the ground as he walks. Keeping his eye on the older man, Garrett hides behind a tree, then moves on. He sees John discard the brown paper on the grass, then look at the cover of the book. Wrapping his arms protectively around the old tome, John carries on his way. A few moments behind him, Garrett treads on the paper. Keeping down low and out of sight, Garrett stops by an old gnarly tree. Nearby, a labourer scything a field looks over in his direction, then returns to his work. Garrett sees John up ahead, sitting on a stile and removing his hat and gloves. John opens the cover of the Tractate Middath, then the first page, revealing Hebrew script in different sizes. Garrett stares at him, wide-eyed and unblinking. A smile creeps across John's face. Garrett swallows his disappointment and carries on watching. As John goes to tear out a page, Garrett flinches. Then a strange spot of black ink drops onto the page, making John stop. It bleeds down the body of text in the centre of the page, then flows out in a fluid, unnatural shape. A creeping, dark shadow closes in. John slowly turns his head as Rant's decaying, cobweb-covered face emerges from the darkness. John's mouth opens in a silent scream. Rant's ashen grey hand reaches out and clamps itself over the gaping hole. A ghostly spider picks its way over Rant's snarling teeth and rotten grey flesh. Then the hand is removed from John's mouth, allowing a final breath to escape before John is swallowed up in darkness.
Help! 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 Hurry, please!
John is lying dead on the ground.
Did you see what happened?
I saw it. Mr. Elder was reading his book, then his face come over all black. He must have had a fit or something.
Yes. Yes, that must have been it. Yes. That must have been it.
Now George is studying the page.
This isn't like any Hebrew I've ever learned.
Are you sure it is Hebrew?
What? Yes. Yes, I suppose. No. Hang on. Hang on. Where is it?
Ah, here it is.
A mirror reveals a last will and testament written back to front.
Look. Clever old bugger. There's some names here. And a date. 20th of July, 1933. Dr. Rant and the witnesses.
You were perfectly right, chum. This isn't Hebrew at all, it's English. And it's a will.
Mr. Justice Passmore concluded, I declare that this is indeed a will of Dr. Thomas Rant, bequeathing the whole of the property lately held by Mr. John Eldred to Mrs. Mary Simpson of Burnham. Clearly, the discovery of this document would more than justify Mr. Eldred's agitation, and I have no doubt hastened his end. As to the partial tearing of the book, well, let us be charitable. So, that's that. Right. I must be getting back.
But you will come again soon.
Certainly, if I may.
Whenever you want.
I'll walk you to the station.
Mary smiles as Garrett follows Anne out, but then her face clouds over when she remembers Mrs. Goundrey's words of warning.
Twisted he was. Twisted. Where others had a soul, he had a corkscrew. Don't trust him. In life or death.
Mary shakes off the memory and gets up. Now it's daytime, and Mary opens the door of Rant's large red brick country house, then steps into the grand hallway. Anne follows her in, followed by Garrett. He takes Anne's hand, and she gives him a loving smile. As they set off to explore the house, a dark shadow appears over the threshold, and dust motes drift through the air. A spider with long, spindly orange legs is picking its way across the floor towards them.